Blog Talk Radio.
We would like to welcome you to Missing Pages of History. That's right, this is Missing Pages of History. It is a show dedicated to be a voice for the voiceless. It's a show dedicated to be a tool to serve underserved communities. We would like to welcome you on every biweekly as from 1 to 145. You can hear Missing Pages of History. That's right, we say 1 to 145. That is our new time. So please share that with your friends, your neighbors, that Mr. Pages of History will now become known biweekly, every other Saturday, like always. But our time has been changed for 1 to 145 Eastern Standard Time. Again, as always, welcome to Missing Pages of History. Today, our major theme is Black Facts, Donald Trump. And we're going to talk about the criminal justice system. The theme, Black Facts, Donald Trump, and the criminal justice system. What we're going to do right now, we're going to bring in one of our analysts and one of our supporters, Emmanuel. He's going to be giving his perspectives on the theme tonight. And later on, we're going to open up our phone lines, which is 818-337-0016. To let you chime in on this particular thing. We'd like to hear from you. But before we hear from anyone, there's a special event Mr. Pages of History just was a part of, and we'd like to share with our listening audience that thanks to WCLM, 1450 AM radio station, located out of Richmond, Virginia, they allow us to host our second quarterly fundraiser, raffle ticket drive. And we had three winners, and we would just like to announce the winners to the world. The third place prize, we had Anthony Wilm out of New Jersey. Congratulations, Anthony. Second place prize, we had Carla Joyner out of North Carolina. Congratulate Mr. Joyner. And for first place prize, we had Carla Williams out of Richmond, Virginia. Those are our winners for our second quarter raffle. We'd like to thank you, and we'd like to thank all of our supporters for supporting our raffle fundraiser, Missing Pages of History. Right now, let's get started with this party. We're gonna bring in Emmanuel Joyner, and one of the things we're gonna do right now, we got a new feature to Missing Pages of History. That feature called Black Facts. Every program we have, we have a little segment called Black Facts. That's information dealing with the history of our people that we think that not only you should know about it, but the world. So, Emmanuel, we would like to welcome you to Missing Pages of History.
Thank you. I'm going to give you four black mini facts, M-I-N-I facts, something we don't know too much about, we should know, but here's a bullet number one. In 1965, Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. was surprised to find black sharecroppers on plantations in Alabama who had never seen a U.S. currency bill at all. Never. And that was in 1965. Hadn't seen a dollar bill of 5 or 10 or 20 in their life on Alabama, on Alabama plantation. The first civil rights bill was enacted by Congress in 1875. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled the act unconstitutional 8 years after it was enacted, and that was in 1875. The next one we passed is 1965. The famous separate but equal doctrine, accepted by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1896, originated in a Massachusetts court in 1847. And in 1996, very interesting mini fact here, in 1896, there were 130,000 registered black voters in Louisiana. 4 years later, after the Plessy versus Ferguson separate but equal doctrine, their ruling, there were only 5,320 registered black voters. 130,000 after Plessy versus Ferguson separate but equal ruling, there were only 5,320 registered black voters. This is what they're trying to bring back now. This is what they're doing. Again, they're rehearsing this new Jim Crow stuff all over again. But those are many facts, many black facts.
Okay, we'd like to thank you, Emmanuel, for bringing forward some of the many black facts to our listening audience. And like always, we always from time to time do some current events or hot topics. Today, our major hot topic is we'd like to talk about this past week, the recent behavior and statement of Donald Trump. Emmanuel, give me your analysis of Donald Trump's behavior and statement and how does it impact the society?
Well, number one is plain stupid if it's not factual. That's number one. Number two, you see what's happening to him, basically. You cannot make those blanket statements or paint one group with a broad paintbrush. It doesn't work. He thinks it works. He's got a certain base for that. But again, who would want Donald Trump to be president of the United States? He filed bankruptcy four times. You want a guy going to bankrupt the country? That's what you want. That's what he's all about. He's not talking about that. How do you make his money? Based in real estate and investors taking their money. And it's about to go up under. He filed bankruptcy, keeps his money, taking everybody else's money. This is what this guy is all about. People are afraid to challenge him on how he made his money or how he makes his money. He's worth about $250 million probably in cash money. Assets, about $7 to $9 billion. But that belongs to investors also. He won't tell the truth. He's a big liar, too. He will not tell the truth. You don't need a lying president. We already had one run to president, then Romney. He was lying. We don't need another lying president. He has no chance because basically he's just plain stupid. You need to get a new hat piece.
Well, Emmanuel, I think in terms of one of the points that you alluded to about the behavior and the history of Donald Trump is how he has used the tool of bankruptcy to accumulate wealth. Can you just explain a little bit more for our listening audience? How do the rich and the wealthy use bankruptcy as a tool to accelerate and accumulate their wealth?
Well, they use it in quite a few different ways. You got Chapter 7, you got Chapter 11, you got Chapter 13. So what they take and do basically is accumulate a lot of debt that they really can't pay back. They can't pay the debt back. They get investors to try to bail them out. They can't bail them out sometimes. So to keep everybody where they need to be, so they don't lose and get a tax write-off, they just file bankruptcy. They file bankruptcy, not to pay nobody. Not to pay your debts off. Debt's done. He have done it four times that I know of that have been recorded, basically. And that's how you use the system. You don't have to pay your debt off. You keep your personal property, basically. So you don't need this anymore, not to pay that off. That's what he has been done. He's been doing it for quite some time. Four times you file commercial or business bankruptcy, that means you're doing a lot of things wrong. You do not know business, basically. You're getting way over your head. He got way over his head with his investors. They trust his name because he got his name, but he's a showman. But you see now a lot of sponsors are dropping him things he cannot do. They're hitting him in the pocketbook. People don't even want to make deals with him anymore. You cannot take, basically, you're talking about a population of Hispanics here, close to 54 million people. And you have about 11 million that don't have citizenship, basically, 11 million. So you still got 33 to 35 million that act as citizens. So again, they're the second largest population here for a propensity concern. We at 42 million, and I think they had 56 million. But so again, 11 million of those are illegal immigrants. So that's what he's talking about. He wants the cheap labor. He wants everything else. But he wants that to go, so you can keep not paying them anything. He don't want to pay nobody. That's our whole problem is poverty. Poverty breeds crime, which I'll get into.
Okay, we'd like to thank you for that analysis, and let's go to our cool program for today, and we'll have you to give us some backdrop on this, on the subject of the criminal justice system. The fundamental question, Emmanuel, is why do we have so many black, brown, and people of color in the prisons, and are associated with the criminal justice system?
Let's do an intro. What I want to do is just give you a brief narrative. And it's a what. And we're going to do why. I'm going to do a what. What does it say about our society that uses jails and prisons as a primary detention facility for poor black and brown people who are racially targeted? I'm going to give you some of those targets. And incarcerate them with eventually, you might have been mentally ill. Some are chemically dependent. You know, the current criminal system has a lot of moving parts. From the legislators who create the laws to the police who enforce them to the courts that apply them and to the jail and prison systems that the people are caught up in this system. They house them. To the public and business community who decide whom to hire, to all of us who either do to our co-workers. But, again, there are a lot of proposed solutions. What I want to give you, basically, is some of the reasons why. Well, the Department of Justice, or DOJ, we have about 2.5 million people right now in our nation's jails and prisons. We have about 4.5 million on probation or parole, which totals 6.8 million, basically. So one in every 35 adults, they're in this system. Just to put a number on it, we are one-fifth of the world's population, and we got 25% of the people in prison, and most of them inside prisons, they're poor and they're black. We only had about 25 years ago about 500,000 people in prison. Now we got 2.7 million as of 1980, basically. But what do we have now? So the first step is to put people in jail. Have an interaction between police and citizens. That's the first thing they create. So the stop and frisk laws, who are they for? The poor people, people of color? That's who they're for. So if you look at it right now, 80% of the stop and frisk law, 80% were blacks and Latinos. 16% white, 4% others, which would be mainly Asians, Indians, whatever. That's all. I mean, look at it. If you look at, again, the police traffic stops, they're racially targeted. Black drivers are stopped 31% more likely, and Hispanic drivers are 23%, and white drivers less than 5%. That's amazing. When black and Hispanics are stopped, they're mostly given tickets, 90% of the time. Whites are given tickets for the same offenses 10% of the time. When blacks and Latinos are stopped, they're most likely to be searched. They were searched three times more than Hispanic drivers. This is just amazing. But again, They're targeting you. But here's an interesting stat. 30% of young black males, 25 or younger, were being stopped every year versus 10% of white. I'm sorry, 7% of white. They need our money. They stop us because 40% of the system, court system, police, are being escorted by African Americans and Latinos. 40%. In Ferguson, was almost 80%. Let's take the state of Missouri. About 40% of the revenue comes from traffic tickets. Traffic tickets are money makers for most towns that have over 30% African Americans in it. And that's amazing. We're a definite target. Most of them can't pay the fine. They go to jail. They go to jail. Let's take in school. Let me hit the schools for a second. In schools, African-American kids are much more likely to be referred to the police than white kids. We're 16% of the enrollment in schools, but we're 30% of the cases referred to the police in the school system. It's just amazing again. We only make up 12% of the population, but we make up 30% of juvenile arrests. There were close to 60,000 people now, 21 years or younger, in the juvenile detention. And of these, over 35% are African Americans. It's just amazing to me. All this stuff is amazing. But this is how they make their money. We have the most toughest drug laws in the world. Just to give you two countries, France and England. A drug offender receives an average sentence of 7 months in France on a drug offense charge. In England, it's 12 months. U.S. of A, 24 months. Again, we are there because the system created this. The system creates a lot of jobs. That's why we're there. Create jobs in prison, jobs in local, state, and federal officials. See, but there's a difference between a jail and a prison. See, jails are local. People are waiting on trial. They're sitting there in the jail, waiting on a bond. Most of us can't even afford a bond. Most bonds for blacks are at least $2,500 to $3,500. We can't even afford that. So we stay there. We have no choice. See, prisons are a little bit different, I tell you, than jails. Prisons are state and federal law for people who have already been convicted. There are 3,000 local jails across the United States. 3,000! And they hold about 500,000 people waiting trial. And another 200,000 are convicted on minor charges. They process 11.7 million people a year. Well, how many African Americans? Over 65%. It is amazing to me.
On that point, Emmanuel, what we'd like to do to let our listening audience know that you are listening to Missing Pages of History. We are doing the first of a multi-series of the criminal justice system. Today, we are dealing with the what, and what I'd like to do right now is invite our listening audience to call in at 818-337-0016. If you have any comments or questions for our contributor and our analyst, Emmanuel, please hit 1 on your phone, and we will acknowledge your last phone number. Please hit 1, and we will acknowledge the last phone number. We do, Emmanuel, have some people who have been waiting for a while. Let's take our first caller. Caller number 3330. Caller 3330. Welcome to Missing Pages of History. Your question or comment on the subject of the criminal justice system that you're dealing with, or what? Yes,
well,
3330.
I'm going to make a comment, and my comment is that one of the things that I've noticed being a young adult is that when you look at a lot of public schools that people of color go to, they almost design them to resemble a prison yard. And I think there's some strong psychology and symbolism there, because basically it's trying to get the students to have the mind state that this is what your future is going to behold, and you don't really have potential, you don't have possibility, but this is what your future is, so get used to it now. We want you to see and we want you to remember this.
You know, Carl, I find your point really interesting, because based upon my experiences of working in the school systems for over 30 years, you are absolutely right. There seems to be a conscious choice of when they're building schools today, they are building them to look like prisons, and they even operate inside like prisons. If you look at how they organize their cafeteria and how they govern them, you would think that you are in a prison. But I wonder, why do we accept these kind of behaviors and these kind of structural decisions that are designed to make us something less than what we are? Emmanuel, would you like to respond to the statement that the caller made about schools are being built and look like prisons? What is that all about?
Well, what they do, they count beds in the fifth grade. They count the students in the fifth grade, the ages, because what's going to happen? There's about 70% chance that an African-American man without a high school diploma will be in prison by the time he reaches his mid-30s. That's amazing. Rates for whites is 17%. You are 70. In New York City, take for example, blacks are jailed at nearly 12 times the rate of whites, and Latinos more than 5 times. The system is built for you. They're going to make sure of that, because you cannot afford a trial. There are about 10% of the people in jail are innocent, but they make you plead. We plea bargain, and but the U.S. public defender make them plead guilty. For what reason? What reason? They plead guilty even though they're innocent. I don't understand their legal rights. If you spend one day in jail, you have a right to a lawyer.
Okay,
if
man,
you
because
in jail, you have a right to a lawyer. And that's what we have to learn, the legal system. But you're right, the schools are being developed that way. Some got bars on them already, very little windows on them, whatever, and bars on the windows. They're painted prison gray.
Okay, caller 3330, let you we can let you make the last statement, then we go into our next caller, which will be 9289. Caller 3330, your last statement. Yeah, right. Closing statement, caller 3330. Okay, let's go to caller 9289. Caller 9289, we welcome you to Missing Pages of History. Question
or
comment, please.
Yes, hi, good evening. I just wanted to make a black historical fact, and it's regarding the guy named Edward Bolshett. From 1852 to 1918, Bolshett was the son of a former slave who moved to New Haven, Connecticut. During that time, only three schools there accepted black students, so which made Edward Bolshett's educational opportunities limited. However, he managed to get admitted to Yale and became the first African-American to earn a Ph.D. and the sixth American of any race to earn one in physics. Although segregation prevented him from attaining the kind of position he would have been able to get with his outstanding credentials, because he was sixth in his graduating class, he ended up teaching for 26 years at the Institute for Colored Youth, serving as an inspiration to generations of young African Americans. And that's just another black history fact. that I just wanted to make people aware of.
Okay, caller, I'd like to thank you. Let's go to one more caller, and then we'll come back to Emmanuel. We got caller 4298. Caller 4298. The question or comment, please.
I just want to bring. Hello? Can you hear
yes,
me?
Yes, go ahead, Carl. Yes, we can.
Okay. I just want to bring up, the mass incarceration has been occurring on unprecedented levels since the Reagan and Nixon and the mass incarceration mentality they brought to the fore. But we forget about Joanne Little sometimes. Joanne Little became the first woman acquitted of murder on the grounds that she had been defending herself against rape. And I don't know if you remember the days, but that used to be a big issue with this. She was raped in the police jail, more or less, and ended up killing the rapist. And that was a big problem there for a moment in the movement. People are taking their positions on her stand. But I just wanted to bring that up as a missing page of history. Also, just for a matter of clarification, the missing pages of history, you said was going to be coming on at 1. It's coming on at 2, coming on at 2 to 2:45 and not 1 to 1:45.
No, Carl, this was just a special occasion at 2 o'clock because we had a special program today at 1. But our normal time would be starting on the 25th of July, would be from 1 to 1:45.
Okay. My mistake, corrected. Thank you.
No problem. We thank you, caller. You are listening to Missing Pages of History as the voice of Missing Pages of History. We are with our analyst and contributor, Emmanuel, who is giving a critique of the criminal justice system and dealing with the what factor. Emmanuel, you heard some comments. Any kind of response you'd like to respond to based upon what comments you have heard so far?
I'm very familiar with the Joanne Lowe case. My first cousin is the one that actually got out of jail and said the sheriff actually raped her in prison. Yeah, I'm very familiar with Joanne Lowe. She's from my wife's hometown down here in North Carolina. She was near Little Washington, down that area down there, out of Greenville. Yeah, I'm very familiar with that. We're talking about the incarceration. It went up 700% since the days of Nixon, also, from the time of a lot of presidents in the 1900s. But the big thing is that I look at a stat that 1 out of 12 black men ages 25 to 54 in jail or prison. 1 out of 12. For whites, it's 1 out of 60. But the thing I want to talk about is prison has become a very big private business.
Mm-hmm.
A very big business here. As we do our series, I'm going to show you the vendors who support it, show you what telephone costs like $12, what they make per hour in prison. Some of them make $28 a month in prison. How many corporations uses them to make furniture, clothing, you just name it. This is the way they're going to bring the jobs back from China, but they're going to make the same amount of money. They won't lose no money because the private corporations are taking over the prisons. They own 67 of them right now in 20 states with 90,000 beds. And Wackenhut, one of the larger security corporations in the world, they donate more than $10 to $25 million. Just for lobbying and to make sure they get these sales full. The deal is to keep these sales full. You can't make money off empty sales. Basically, to keep a person inmate in prison, $105,000 per year, plus. The private enterprises do it for $65,000, plus. Take out the money they save. But the corporations, they own them. Of 159,000 people serving life sentences, 50% are black. How can 12% of the population, 12%, and 159,000, half are black? That's amazing to me.
And let me stop you for a second, Emmanuel, because let our listener what know who listened to us by phone that we'll be going off in about less than 20 seconds. But here, the entirety of the program, you can go to our archive at blogtalkradio.com/missing-pages-of-history-inc. You can always hear the entirety of the program, or you can go online. So we'd like to just remind our listening audience, this is a bi-weekly program. Our next program will be on the 25th of July, Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And we'd like to just briefly share with you again our second quarterly Ralph Jordan fundraiser, which we'll have today at WCLM, 1450 a.m., took place. And we'd like to congratulate our winners. First prize, we had Ms. Carolyn Williams out of Richmond, Virginia. Second prize, we had Mr. Carter Joyner out of North Carolina. Third prize, we had Anthony Williams out of New Jersey. We'd like to congratulate you, and we'd like to let our listening audience know that Missing Pages of History will be doing a special program on the 25th, and we're talking about launching our website. We want to let you know that our website is coming, and we will officially launch it on the 25th. So please stay tuned and check us out. Okay, we're going back to our analyst, Emmanuel. Emmanuel, one of the things I noticed in terms of the discussion dealing with the criminal justice system, you talk about the what, there seems to be just an embeddedness of there's so much money that when you have a lot of money to be made, nobody is against any kind of change. So how do you address the question of trying to change something who has generated the potential of being a multi-billion-dollar industry year after year after year forever?
It's a $70 billion industry, and we got things that we can do to it, basically. See, this is what's not going to happen. But the thing is that, again, mass incarceration, we can't do it through the traditional mechanisms of electoral politics. Can't be done that way. Cannot be done through the courts. State and federal legislations, they're useless. Corporations, which have basically took mass incarceration to a huge revenue stream, $70 billion a year. Well, you got to take the economics from it. You got to, what you're going to do, boycott? Yes. Divest? Yes. Sanction the corporations? Yes. That's the only way to do it. See, profit is the only language that involves corporations, how they speak. They only speak through profit. We have to speak to them to the same language that they understand. That is the only way. Organizing boycotts, work stoppage inside the prisons, refuse the prisons and their families to pay into their accounts of phone companies. Just to give you an example, a phone company, I'm going to give you the network. If you send our series, I'm going to let you know who these companies are, who's in the prison, making them like they are. So all we have done, basically, when a young woman come out of prison, it moves from slavery to sharecropping. Because these fines and obligations they have put on people. They can't get a job. You haven't left anything. Everything is owned by the former slave master, same thing. So what they're going to do to prisoners now, like you're going to buy, you have to almost pay for your clothes now because you're making $28 a month. Well, what are we going to do? This is what we need to do. Let's go back for 1 second. Back in prison, you're making $28 a month average. A month. You're not even making a dollar a day in prison. When you come out of there, you owe any kind of debt. They take all that from you. So you come with no money. The average person goes back to prison who's been in prison 85% the first 6 months. You go right back. In 3 years' time, you go back almost 90%. Within 3 years, you go back. So that this is like an exploding door. But the biggest thing we got to understand is understand that we are feeding our prisons, and the vendors are making a whole bunch of money. And some prisons, you can't even bring food to your husband who's in prison, or boyfriend, or girlfriend. You can't bring. They have stopped that. They want you to buy from the store inside the prison, or from the vending machines, who are owned by corporations. It's just amazing what's going on. You have to buy, you want to buy a pair of sneakers, you have to buy them from there, from Reebok, $45. Well, that's almost 2 months' salary. And you're working every day. One prison, I think, is paying $8.75 an hour, I think, in New Jersey. That's the only state. They control everything. Transfer of money. They control the telephone calls. They control the private prisons, of course. And anything in the prison is mainly double what it costs outside the prison. And these companies make an average of $41 million a year. All these different companies they got up in there. You can't believe all the companies up in there. During this series, I'm going to name you all the vendors who's in the prison system making money. You're going to be shocked. You're going to be shocked who's making money, who's supplying food in the prison system. And one of them is McDonald's, by the way. I'll give you one. And one of them is Walmart. I'll give you two. I'm going to tell you what's going on, how much money they make out of the prison system. You're not going to take this away from them. This is their bread and butter. It's the only bread and butter they can get that they are totally controlling. See, once in the prison system, when they do the labor in there, well, what's going to happen? You can't unionize in there. There are no benefits. There are no sick days. You sure you don't get no vacation time. What are we talking about here? Don't worry about safety. 4,000 prisoners die in prison every year, murdered, because of the contentious behavior in the prison system. This is all corporate power. Over 1 million prisoners, with half of the prisoners in prison, they are employed by corporations inside the prison. I call them corporate masters. This is what we got. We cannot ignore the plight of the prison system. We got to find a way to dismantle it and make it fair. In my closing, I'd like to say this. There is no universal and emphatic agreement that if we do not organize to destroy the country's system of mass incarceration, it will spread like a cancer.
Andy Banyan, on that note, we only have a couple minutes left. We just would like to remind everyone that today our theme was dealing with Black Facts, Donald Trump, and the criminal justice system. This is the first phase of many phases that we'll be discussing the criminal justice system. So we'd like to invite you to come back on July 25th at 1 p.m. and have this important dialogue with us. Before we close out, we have a couple minutes left. We'd like to Emmanuel, just talk a little bit about Missing Pages and alert our listening audience something about Missing Pages in terms of, we know for the next 2 months, from July the 1st to August the 31st, there will be an MPH TV T-shirt sale drive going on. We'd like for all our supporters and listening audience who is interested in purchasing a T-shirt for Missing Pages, please email us at Missing Pages of History, Inc., #1@Yahoo. We have a T-shirt drive going on. It will take place in the month of July and August. And during this upcoming fall, we're going to be doing some activities that will involve the use of our T-shirts. We want to share that with our community. We want to show our community who we are. We're going to be doing some shows, we're going to be doing some car washes, we're going to be doing events that nonprofit organizations normally do to help involve themselves in the community. As well as, we want you to be aware of that on Comcast 95 and Richmond, Virginia area, and metropolitan area. There will be a live TV show by Mr. Page History that will start in the month of September, September 16th. So put that day on your calendar. Then we'll be on live on Comcast Channel 95 in Richmond, Virginia, starting September 16th. And we want you to make sure that this program will be coming on from 9 to 10 p.m. So we know those are some of the activities coming up, Emmanuel. Emmanuel, can you just speak to the people the whole purpose of Missing Pages and how they can support us in other ways?
Yeah, this is going to be one of the top programs because, again, we're going to deal with the facts and what's going on and the exploitation that's going on. And that's the only way the flag came down in South Carolina. Well, that's just a flag. That's just a symbol. That's a piece of cloth. We got to visit the capitalist exploitation, and it must stop. But it will not stop unless we build a movement to make it stop. Every organization that calls itself a civil rights organization, they should be tackling this particular frontal. Any organization like us is what we're going to be fighting. If you do not have the plight, condition of incarcerated on their agenda, they need to hand in their credentials. We're not handing it out. But this is something here. Another way to exploit capital exploitation. We have to do this. We have to halt the abuse of the poor inside the prison and the ones who are in there that are about 10% innocent. And, of course, we're going to have you, a lot of statistics. They're coming from Harvard. They're coming from Stanford. They're coming from the university that we're very common with. They believe in these universities. That's where I'm getting my information from and my statistics from. And they're the latest. I got people working with me on this. Mason Basil History is going to be very instrumental in going down this path to make sure your children and my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren, again, will not put this away for 50 more years. The average white person, when they pass away, they leave $141,000 to the family. African-American, $11,000. That is the disparity between the two of us, $141,000 to $11,000. And that's a marriage. I mean, that's two people. That's a family, basically. That's where you are. You're nowhere close. You're only 1% of really what's going on. 1% of this country is for having any kind of equality. Everything is unequal by a long shot. The stats I'm going to be giving you, we're going to some other areas later on, that's going to show you that what we need to do as a people.
Okay, Emmanuel, we've got to stop you right there. We'd like to let everyone know that you are listening to the voice of Missing Pages History, and we'd like to remind you that MPH radio program can be listened to by dialing in at 818-337-0016 or go online to our archive for past programs, and that is at www.blogtalkradio/missing-pages-of-history-inc. UMPH is a nonprofit 501c program, tax exempt. For all who would like to support MPH or send a contribution, they can send it to MPH Inc. at P.O. Box 27, 782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. That's 23261. And we'd like to remind you that we'll be on July 21st. Our new time is at 1 p.m. Please come in. And we'll be launching our website on the 25th. So please stay tuned. Again, we are having a MPH t-shirt sale drive going on for the next 2 months. We want to encourage you to come and order your t-shirts. Please write us if you have an interest right now or supporting us. You can contact us through our email at missingpagesofhistory1@yahoo.com. That's missingpagesofhistory1 missingpages1@yahoo.com, or you can call 804-726-3217. We'd like to thank all those who have supported us, all those who listen to our program, and of course, we'd like to thank you.